You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 359, recorded on August 20th, 2014.
Welcome to the 359th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 192nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Right. You know, we're creeping towards 200 on the video
game. We are slowly creeping towards 200.
Actually, it's interesting. We passed 200 episodes technically on the Video Game Roundtable. Because there were 9 episodes that were specials. You know, there weren't 200 full episodes. There weren't 200 full episodes, but there were 201, you know, releases of the podcast. So,
well, don't tell people that or they'll think we're lying.
Well, no, I mean, we haven't had 200 episodes, you know. Because a couple of them were breaking news, like when the PlayStation Network went down. Some of them were just, oh, sorry, there's no podcast this week, but check us next week, you know. So that sort of thing.
So not 200 regular episodes.
No. And, yeah, the other thing is that we're slowly creeping up on 400 as well, but that's going to be a while.
Yeah, that'll be a year.
What? No. 41 weeks, I'm 4/5 of a year anyway. But, you know, I guess we can say 375, but that's still around, like, winter. But, you know, I mean, how many podcasts do you know have reached 400?
I have no idea.
I'll tell you. You know, a lot of major podcasts do not have 400 episodes. A lot of major podcasts don't have 359 episodes, actually, so... You're on a long-running podcast here if you're listening in. We're veterans, or at least the podcasts are veterans. Although, you know, you joined up with the Video Game Roundtable, I think, in like 2008, 2009. So, wow.
Probably 2010.
No. Well, even yeah. So, 4 years. Even at the very minimum, it's 4 years.
Wow. No yeah. Wonder I feel so old.
Have you hit 30 yet, or are you still 29? Are you going to... How many years are you going to be 29?
As many as I can get away with.
Yeah. So anyways, what have you been playing, Paul?
I have actually fallen in love with an iOS game called The Room.
What? It's not based on the Tommy Wiseau movie, is it?
No.
Oh. And it's not the Silent Hill 4 of The Room either, is it?
No, I don't think so.
So what is The Room?
Yeah, it's an interesting puzzle game, similar to 999 on the DS or 7PS.
Or you just mean nines?
What?
Is it like nines?
I have no idea. No, it's not at all. It's you know what? It's kind of similar to Myst.
Oh, okay. So it's like an RTS. What's it called? It's like you have a control, well, not control, direct control, but you have some control over a couple of large people and... You know, you have to tell them what to do, and they do it in real time. Is that what you're saying?
No, Myst from the 90s.
Oh, Myst.
Remember that?
Oh, it's like it's an adventure game. Okay.
Yes.
It's sort of like Seventh Guest or 11th Hour.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. I was just going to say Seventh Guest.
Oh, you said Myst, because Myst was by Bungie, and it was a tactical RTS that was groundbreaking at the time. But so.
That's a Myst. A Myst. Yes.
Good grief, it's a running gag. Oh, that's Hare Krishna. anyway, so how, what's it called? So it's a puzzle-based adventure game.
Yes.
Okay.
It's I've actually quite fallen in love with it. I played the original and the sequel since our last podcast. I highly recommend it. The first one's free.
I have missed 3 here, which I still have not yet played. I do have the soundtrack, too.
What was that, Riven?
Yeah, I think that was Riven. And I was surprised to learn when I was looking at the soundtrack that Jack Wall did the soundtrack. And most people now know him for being the guy who did Mass Effect and Mass Effect 2. And is also the conductor of the video games live, which is called the orchestra.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I have to check to see if he did the first Myst and the second Myst too. So,
well, you should get on that.
Did you play the Professor Layton games?
I played the first one.
Okay, so did I. And, you know, the thing about Professor Layton is the subsequent games, you know, I played a little of, and they had to recycle the puzzles because there's just so many kind of puzzles that you can do, right? So, but I did enjoy the story of the first game. It was very interesting. I'm not going to spoil for anybody, even though it's like 10 years old or something by now.
A good puzzle never dies.
Yeah. I'm still playing Mass Effect 3 on my Xbox 360, but I did get my Xbox One back.
Yay.
So I'm able to watch TV through my Xbox One. The thing is that I'm playing more on my 360 at the moment than I am on the Xbox One, simply because, A, Mass Effect 3, but also have a hankering to play some Jade Empire 2. And the thing is that I looked up Jade Empire on Steam, and I read the user reviews, and all of them were saying don't buy it because it's screwed up on current Windows. So I'm staying away from the Windows version until they get that fixed. So I'm forced to get the Xbox backwards compatibility on the Xbox 360 for it. So,
the other things you have to do to play a great game.
Yeah, but you know, Jade Empire is totally worth it. So have you played? You haven't played Jade Empire, did you?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, it's a wonderful game. You should try it. It's like I think it's like 2007 game, and it's by BioWare, and the game still looks absolutely gorgeous. Looks really, really good. And it has John Cleese in it, so.
Well, who doesn't love John Cleese?
Yeah. He plays Sir Roderick something-something Higginbottom and his musket Mirabelle. Anyways. And, of course, being a John Cleese character, he basically insults you the entire time. So.
Fantastic.
I also got some free games for the Xbox One, Crimson Dragon and the... I forgot the name of the other one. So I'll be trying those when I can. The thing is, you know, it's still early in the Xbox One's life. There's the games I have, you know, they're okay, but they're not the kind that just draw me back over and over and over again, right? I mean, had they actually released MLB 2K this year, I might have been doing that, but they decided not to release a baseball game this year. So I'm waiting for... I'm waffling on Destiny if I want to get that or not. So, anyways, we have some... Since the strict video game news is kind of light right now, aside from they say this console sucks and this console is... I couldn't believe how much console warfare is going on right now, and I'm not even going to touch on that because, for one thing, it's dull. And there is some console news, but the first news item we're going to do is actually... cell phone based, and it does have some video gaming applications here. T-Mobile now offers app that unlocks your smartphone, and this comes to us from GeekWire. It's only been a week since President Barack Obama signed a bill into law that allows Americans to unlock their cell phones. Now, by the way, apparently you could always have done that, but since the President of the United States signed it into law, it's sort of like, okay, well now, you know, these companies have no excuses anymore. Now they have to obey. You know, before it was sort of like, well, technically it's okay, but you know, you're EULA, blah, 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 blah. Now it's like, okay, that's it. You can do it if you want to.
So imagine that.
Yeah.
Federal legislative action changing a topic.
Yeah. Allowing you to change things that you already own. But T-Mobile is already offering an easy way for its customers to do so. The Bellevue-based company is now has an app called Device Unlock it's only on the T-Mobile Galaxy Avant that lets people unlock their devices to run any wireless carrier. The Device Unlock lets users unlock either permanently or temporarily for those who are traveling abroad. In order to unlock devices, customers must have their phones paid off and must have been with T-Mobile for at least 40 days. T-Mobile already allowed customers to unlock their phones, but a customer had to call customer support. The new app is now another recent example of T-Mobile attempting to differentiate itself from the likes of like AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint as part of T-Mobile's quote-unquote uncarrier strategy, which has included shifting customers away from long-term contracts that have defined the wireless industry, in addition to offering early upgrades, free international data roaming, and paying early termination fees for those who switch to T-Mobile. According to the CEO, John Laguerre, we have completely reversed T-Mobile's trajectory and started a revolution that is changing the rules in wireless. More recently, the company has offered a deal that allowed people to test an iPhone on T-Mobile's network for a week and has also launched a new program that gives customers unlimited music streaming without data limits. I sound like a T-Mobile commercial right now, don't I?
Yes, yes, you do.
As a matter of fact, by the way, I do. T-Mobile is my carrier, but that's not why this item is in there. Both Sprint and French-based telecom company Iliad have shown strong interest in acquiring T-Mobile, but last week it appeared that Sprint was giving up on its plan, and T-Mobile turned down the proposal from Iliad. Laguerre is predicting that T-Mobile is going to surpass Sprint in total customers by the end of the year. So how this is video game related is that not only does unlocking allow you to do new carrier, but it also allows you to legally jailbreak your device to run the software that you want. And this is mostly pointed at people who own Apple iPhones and iPods. It allows them to play what they want to play on their thing without having to worry about Apple saying no. You know, they still have to jump through a few hoops, I'm sure. But, you know, I mean, one of the things that people always want to do with their iOS devices is to jailbreak them. But they're always scared of, you know, running afoul with Apple. Well, now that can't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have a technical enough background to immediately see all the benefits of this. But I do know that it's a pain when something is available on Kindle, for example, and it's not available on, you know, on an iPhone, and or the other way around. And I'm looking at you, Disney Instant Movie Viewer.
You know, the thing is, it's also annoying when you go – whenever I have traveled to Europe, it's annoying that I can't use my cell phone out there because, no, sorry, you're somewhere else. You can't use it.
Right, because you're such a jet setter.
No, it's like once every 2 years, but still.
Okay. You know,
and I don't pay for it, by the way. Other people pay for my trips. I can't afford a trip to Europe. So.
Well, hopefully that'll change soon.
Yeah, hopefully. Now I remember last episode you gave EA Access your Paul Nowak's consumer thumbs of approval here. So where are you on this right now?
I'm hesitant until I understand all the implications.
You know, what I do like is that T-Mobile is very confident because they say, hey, you know what? If you want to try someone else out, go right ahead. We'll unlock and you can use someone else because we know you'll be back for us. That's basically what they're saying with their quote-unquote uncarrier strategy. You know, it's like, yeah. If you want to go to AT&T, Verizon, whatever, you know. But we don't care if you do that because, you know, we'll come back to us. You know, so, I mean, customer support is something that's often devalued by a lot of companies. Those that do, what's it called, that do realize that customer support actually brings in more customers, surprise, surprise, that's something that needs to be seen more of. And I'm pretty sure you agree with that.
I agree.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Analysts say downloadable titles make up 92% of the PC games market. And this comes to us from Ars Technica. Anyone paying vague attention to the PC games market has long known that it's a space dominated by downloadable titles. Still, it's a bit astounding to hear a report estimating that a full 92% of PC game sales in 2013 came from digital downloads, as DFC Intelligence recently told British tech site PCR. That may sound high, even to people who haven't bought a PC game on a disc for years, but it lines up with other numbers reported throughout the industry. Last year, Payday 2 publisher Starbreeze announced that 80% of its 1.58 million first-month sales came from downloads, for instance. And let's not forget the scores of PC games that are literally ignoring retail sales for 100% downloadable releases these days, from Dota 2 to DayZ. Download-dominated PC gaming is a newer phenomenon than some gamers might realize. As recently as 2010, analysts from NPD were estimating that downloads made up only 48% of the PC game sales. One possible reason for the sharp increase over the last 4 years is money brought in from newly ascendant free-to-play and microtransaction-driven PC games. In April, a DFC report on the PC games market found that free-to-play games, especially MOBAs like League of Legends and Dota 2 were driving heavy increases in overall PC game spending, pushing it above overall console game spending for the first time in recent memory. The market for PC game downloads looks very different from the game consoles base, where analysts from EEDAR estimates that downloads make up less than 20% of game sales, though the group sees that propagation growing to 50% by 2018. Last month, EA revealed that, quote, full game downloads make up for only 10 to 15% of its console game business. Despite how the downloads victory on PC, few gamers seem to have given up on disc space. Despite the downloads victory on PC, few gamers seem to have given up disc-based games entirely across the industry. An NPD survey earlier this year found that only 16% of U.S. gamers played downloadable games exclusively across consoles, PC, and mobile.
Whoa, wait. Here's a question: is it how many games on mobile are not downloadable? I don't understand why they would include that. I mean, all games on mobile are downloadable. I don't see a disc slot on my cell phone for that. You know.
Well, it depends on what you consider mobile, because the 3DS, for example. I mean, I know. You could still
Handheld consoles, mobile games. So, I mean, when I say mobile, I usually think mobile phone.
Well, I mean, that's where we start looking at our construct of the word mobile.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is that, you know, if you go to GameStop, you know, if they have a PC section at all, you know, you go to there, it's like World of Warcraft, The Sims, and a bunch of games, and that's it. You know, there's almost no selection there, because, you know, most games are purchased on digital. And the thing is that, you know, I think a big part of that has been the Humble Bundle, in which you can get like 10 games for $4. You know, you can get 3 games for a penny if you wanted to. So people are whetting their appetite, you know, for having, you know, digital is no longer scary to the PC gamer, right?
Right.
You know, it used to be that, well, what if the company goes out of business and I don't have a disc that I can keep forever, you know? So I
think also the expected shelf life of media has shortened. While a few hardcore people might want to go back and play the original Myst, you know, how much of a market does that decades-old game in its original incarnation really have at this point?
Well, actually, you know, I mean, Seventh Guest and 11th Hour were big sellers when they were on Steam Greenlight. I mean, they might not...
Right, and so people, if they want to get them, can still access them.
Yeah. The other thing is that if you notice EA's Access, you know, they're trickily indoctrinating people into getting full game downloads on console, or at least the Xbox One, because what that involves is that you download the entire game as a full game demo that's for the first 5 days before it's actually released. So when you download it, you're downloading the entire game, you know. It's just going to lock when the game is actually released, you know, and if you buy it, you get to keep your save files and all that. But in order to keep it, you know, you're probably going to just keep the download, you know. So
I was actually more surprised to hear EA's numbers. I mean, being a fan of SimCity, I bought the original part of that game in Best Buy, but then I just went and downloaded all the additional content. Like, I didn't keep running to the store.
I wonder how much.
It was surprising that it was only like, what did they say, 10 to 15%?
It was, what do you mean? You mean of full game downloads make up only 10 to 15%, yeah.
Right. I mean, I'm not even sure that that's how they were framing it.
Of its console games business, though, SimCity is not a console game.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah, I mean,
I just didn't understand the copy while I was reading it.
Now, I think SimCity sold, what, like 5 million to date? I'm not sure. But, you know, the other major factor, of course, is also hard drives. I have a 2 terabyte hard drive, right? And one of the barriers for getting full game downloads, especially their big games, you know, was the hard drive space. I mean, it was not like five years ago in which if a game was 10 gigabytes, you had to, oh, shoot, what am I going to delete off my hard drive to install this game?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Memory's gotten like dirt cheap nowadays.
So, you know, so people can have a bunch of games And, you know, I mean, I still have 700 gigabytes free in my 2 terabyte hard drive space, you know. So it's like I don't – it makes me a little sloppy though. I have to go to my temporary downloads and delete all this stuff. I think I have like 50 gigabytes of undeleted stuff that, you know, patches and all that, that I should just wipe away, you know.
You probably should do that.
Yeah. I did defragment my hard drive. I'm not totally sloppy when it comes to that.
Oh, good.
So anyway, we're going to move on to the next item. Drive Club was delayed due to quote-unquote huge technical issues, says Yoshida. The decision to delay Evolution Studios' racing game Drive Club from the PlayStation 4 launch window in 2014 was due to a large-scale technical issue, Sony Worldwide Studios president Shuhei Yoshida told Eurogamer. We say that guy's name a lot, don't we?
What's this we?
Well,
I can't say it the first time.
Well, you could. I know you can say other guys like Miyamoto.
Well, yeah, they're a little different there.
Driver Club was announced along with the PS4 console reveal in February 2013, with Sony touting the social-focused car title as a launch game. Then October, with 1 month to go before the PS4's November 15 launch, the game was delayed into early 2014. This past April, Sony announced that Drive Club has been delayed again, and instead of launching in early 2014... the game will hit the PS4 on October 7th. At the time, Evolution Studios game director Paul Rushniask, you know, this is more of your kind of, this is a Slavic name, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Paul.
Oh, I'm going to let you struggle with that one.
Paul Rushniaski? Okay.
Rushniaski.
Said the delay was due to problems with, quote-unquote, primarily just one feature, the game's dynamic menu system. We're excited about what Drive Club is now, Yoshida told Eurogamer during the Gamescom. Last year we were hoping to get it done, but there was a huge technical issue, so the team had to go back and re-engineer parts of the game. Oh, that I want you to pounce on when you say, when you have to re-engineer parts of the game. Yeah, you re-engineer any part of the game. You're gonna have to re-engineer the entire game, if I'm not mistaken. That's the reason it took so long. It's almost a year because the team went back to the drawing board with some of the key aspects of the game. So now what we have is a game that the team has already reimagined. Yoshida added, "I personally checked out other racing games at E3, and personally, I was very happy. It's a different kind of game compared to other games you mentioned. I don't see any direct competition from my perspective. I don't know. People will tell us when it comes out. Drive Club will be launched this fall alongside a handful of other racing games, including Forza Horizon 2 on September 30th, Ubisoft's The Crew on November 11th, and Project Cars sometime that same month." So, yeah, you're the developer. Someone walks in and say, we have to re-engineer one part of this game. What happens?
Well, I mean, it depends what they're talking about. If they're talking about a fundamental design flaw, then, you know, there's ways to try and work around it depending on what it is.
Well, here's the thing.
Like a feature not being present when one needs it to be.
Right.
But if it's a problem with the core code, I mean, then it's no wonder that the whole project's been derailed for a year.
Well, here's the thing. Drive Club, and I love how he says, it's not like any other games that are coming out. Okay, so it's a social racing game, and for those of you who don't know, it's one in which you're driving around, you're online constantly, and when you see friends, they're going to appear as ghosts on the map or whatever like that, and then you can engage them in the game, you know, sort of like an online thing. That's what Forza Horizon does. That's what the Forza Horizon series is doing. That's what the last Need for Speed did. Need for Speed, but what was the name of the Criterion project? Oh,
I have no idea.
Darn. Anyway, and that's what The Crew is going to do, right? And the thing is, when you have something that is so ingrained into online, you know, your game is online, which means, and that's what they're talking about the menu system. No, it's more like the online connectivity issue, because what they're doing is, you know, when your friends come on, you have to be able to talk to them, you know, contact them and say, let's race and all that stuff. So I think it is something that's very ingrained, which is probably why they're stumbling around on this, you know. And it's interesting to know because the PS3 could not do this. It was very bad at online, right? The PS4 has a better online system, but the question of how much better it is still a question a lot of people have. So it's very ambitious, you know, being able to do this. And I'll let you go on.
Well, I mean, I don't really have here the information about what the problem was.
Well, the menus, the dynamic menu system, which means, you know, it's responding to things that are going online and offline and all that stuff, you know.
So was it a problem getting communication to and from the main server?
I would guess it is. Something like that. Okay. I think it has something to do with, you know, because that's one of the big stumbling blocks of all these games that want to be online only, or at least have a persistent online aspect, you know, is it's a lot more difficult than it's a lot more difficult than people assume. And it's surprising to me because, you know, I think it's maybe the executives are saying, we want this in the game. And the engineers are going, do you know how difficult that is? And they say, no, it should be easy. Go ahead and do it. And they say, okay. Don't be surprised if this gets delayed, because that's why Watch Dogs was delayed, and that's why all these other games, you know, that had a strong online component were delayed. Even SimCity was delayed because of it. So, anyways, so we're gonna move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
NHL 15 will be missing some features on Xbox One and PS4, and this comes to us from Shaq News. NHL 15 is just weeks away from hitting the boards on both current and previous consoles, but if you're going after the Xbox One and PS4 versions of the game, you may notice a couple of things are missing. EA Sports has confirmed that the popular Hockey League mode won't be present and accounted for in the new game, although Xbox 360 and PS3 owners will still be able to play it in full. When it came down to it, EA Sports producer Sean Rajmansein explained it was a quality issue. Quote, as a franchise, we're 100% committed to the EA Sports Hockey League, he said, speaking on the EA Sports blog. We're a franchise built on quality. That still doesn't quite explain why it's missing, but here's hoping we'll see it make a comeback next year. Meanwhile, online team play mode will also be missing once the game launches, but EA Sports intends to include that as a future update or down the road, although a specific date hasn't been given. This leaves such models as Play Now, Be a Pro, Be a GM, Online versus Hockey Ultimate Team, and NHL Moments Lives all to be included in all the versions of NHL 15. NHL 15 releases on September 9th for the Xbox One, Xbox 360, PS3, and PS4.
Now, you don't have to be a fan of hockey or the NHL series to raise one eyebrow at this, because basically they're saying that the old versions of the game will be more feature-rich than the bright new shiny console you just bought. And somehow, the big, bright, shiny consoles that you just bought aren't able to handle the features that are in the older versions. And that just that's baffling to me. I mean, I get why. You know, sort of, you know, their new consoles and all that stuff.
Well, it's because
still.
Well, I mean, it's because we've had, as developers, more time to work with these older platforms, so we can get the same features out the door in a more experienced time frame.
But that still doesn't make any sense, because, for one, you know, the quote-unquote language that the new consoles are using are more or less the same. You know, and they should have more capabilities, you know, and I'm just wondering what's going on there, you know, and it reminds me of how lazy EA Sports has been before. I mean, Jordan could have told you that FIFA for the Wii, they didn't even bother changing the game. I think they had different socks and that was it, you know, and I'm wondering if they're going cheap, quote-unquote, cheap on NHL, because they should have been lead developing this on the next-gen I mean, they've had the specs for over a year. I mean, like a year before the consoles were released. And they had dev kit, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, again, not really programming background, so I can't really speculate.
Yeah, I just...
But from a production standpoint, it sounds like it would be a more logical thing to make it custom for the next gen consoles and then retrofit it for existing gen.
By the way, this reminds me of The Sims 4. Now, I don't know if you saw this, but there was a list, and they're an official list, you know, people compiled this, of all the features that would be held out of The Sims 4, and it was an incredible list to see. I mean, yeah, I mean, you're going to have, you know, there are some sacrifices, but some of them were just baffling, you know? And it just, I mean, it makes me not want to buy Sims 4. I mean, it is that bad. It was that much that was removed from the game. And if you see the quote-unquote town, there is no town, you know?
Well, then maybe do what I did for SimCity. Wait a year.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And the thing is, here's the thing that's really troubling, is that EA is doing what bad movies do. You know, they're not not releasing review copies until the game has been released.
Hmm.
That's a warning sign. Because you know what happens when a movie does not have a screening for critics, you know, and those reviews are on Saturday instead of Friday? Invariably, it's because they don't want reviewers to review their product. So,
well, I mean, it could also be that they don't feel the need to take that extra step, only because that's extra, you know, money to be spent on development time.
If that's something they do with the games, they know they're going to be really huge successes, right?
Right. I mean, it's The Sims.
But when you realize all the stuff that is being withheld, basic stuff from The Sims 4, that sets off a lot of warning signs. Which,
but is it being withheld or is it being postponed so that they can get their initial launch out the door?
It's not being postponed. It's releasing on September 2nd, no matter what, come hell or high water.
Right, but are those features going to be available in the future for free download?
For free download? This is The Sims. I severely doubt it.
I don't know.
I mean, you know.
But if they're considered core features, they might just be updates. In the same way that offline play was an update to The Sims, to SimCity.
Oh, no. These are not, this is not online, offline sort of stuff. It is more like just wholesale stuff. For instance, there's no creative style. There's no modification. You can't change the public space. There are no normal careers. Law enforcement, medical, business were all removed. There's no open world. You can't walk from house to house without a loading screen. There's no pools. There's no terrain tools. There's no story progression aside from aging. There's no toddlers. All the buildings must have a lot that is not a just a lot of, you know. There's no acne, no aliens, no animated hair, no aspiration failures. There's no babysitters. There's no bartenders. There's no basements. There's no bookstores. There's no burglars. There's no cars, no cemeteries, no cinemas, no cleaning skill, no clothes shopping, no color wheel, no comfort needs, no curfew, no multi-tone hair, no dinner proposals, no diseases or illnesses, no dreaming, you know, no environment needs, no eyelash, you know, it just goes on and on and on and on. No restaurants, no repairmen, no random... like I said.
Well, that sounds more like a fundamental redesign than a technical issue.
Yes, but, you know, that's not what The Sims is, though, you know.
Well, it might not be what The Sims has become, but perhaps they're trying to take the brand in a different direction.
Yeah, and that direction is what?
Well, it was much more focused on the architectural influence of an individual because of their surroundings.
That was
and it just has become something else.
Well, that's comfort needs, right? I mean,
it was just the original concept for The Sims was how does your existing architecture affect you as an individual?
That's not. But you see, the thing is that the architecture had an effect on your needs, right? Like having to go to the bathroom and eating. You know, so it's just, you know, like I said, it's no longer a day one purchase for me. It's more like I'm going to wait and see before I even give them a single penny of mine.
To me, The Sims sounds more like an interesting redesign, trying to take the brand in a new direction rather than a technological problem, which is what it sounds like the racing game is suffering from.
Sounds like Spore to me. It sounds like it's going to be a disaster like Spore. You know, anyway.
I don't know. It's The Sims. I wouldn't put money against it.
Yeah, but you know, it's not hard to torpedo a popular series. You know, it's not.
Well, yeah, but when you're trying to give people something different instead of just more of the same, you have to take a chance.
They wanted the same plus more features. They didn't want the same plus less features. You know? Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Take it away, Paul.
No, I just read. That's you.
Oh, okay. YouTube subscription plan leaks. Offline play, no ads, 20 million songs. And this comes from Ars Technica. More details have leaked about Google's upcoming subscription service for YouTube. These in the form of screenshots posted by the Android Police on Monday. I love that, the Android Police. It sounds like a new show. You know, it's a new TV show. Android Police. Per the screenshots, users will be able to play music on their mobile phones with or without video in the background or with your screen off, all things that the single-tasking YouTube apps could not previously do. Subscribers will also be able to play music via YouTube Mix, a recently added feature that works similarly to radio stations on other streaming services. A YouTube Music Key subscription provides access to a 20 million song catalog, roughly the same size as that of Spotify or RDO, as well as a collection of material that the app refers to as concerts, covers, and remixes. While YouTube is rife with content beyond the artist's official discographies, a lot of it is legally questionable provenance. It's not clear from the screenshots how Google will decide what goes into the YouTube Music Key. Subscribers to the service will also be subscribed to Google Play Music Key for free, which is likely a rebranded Google Play Music All Access. Google is reportedly at work at a YouTube Music Key for more than a year, and its launch has been delayed repeatedly. More recently, sources are reporting that Google is threatening to block music labels from its YouTube monetization program if they don't make the artist content available for both the free and premium tiers of YouTube. YouTube Music Key still has no official launch date. According to the screenshots, the service will be priced at $9.99 per month. So, the other thing is, offline music, how does that work with YouTube?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of fuzzy space on YouTube is quite frankly baffling.
I think, you know, the premium stuff is probably going to be, you know, they're talking about Vivo, you know, whenever you do a music video, you invariably it's either Vivo or other magic music, you know, people. So it's probably going to be something like that, you know.
Well, YouTube, funnily enough, YouTube serves as three different platforms all at the same time. There's artists reaching out to fans and trying to sell their music. There's people, individuals posting information, you know, how-to videos and, you know, their own comedy content. And then there's a whole nother dimension of like library and cataloging other forms of media. So it's really interesting to see how it could try to be all, you know, how any subscription service could try to continue to be all of those things at the same time.
Well, I think the main thrust of it is trying to be Spotify, you know? And
in that case, why not just be Spotify?
Well, because they don't own Spotify.
Right, but why not follow that model more closely?
Because they have other content. I mean, you know.
Right, and so going back to my original point, how do you serve all three types of communities on a subscription basis?
I think you just do. I think it's mostly about the music, and you give a sort of a cursory nod to the other stuff.
I don't know. I think Davey Wavy and Felicia Day might disagree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly use YouTube for Red Letter Media and also Mass Effect 3 videos.
I don't want to know about you and your Red Letter Media.
Red Letter Media is a comedic movie review sort of thing. They're the Mr. Plinkett.
Sure it is. And I'm sure we're doing red light reviews in Amsterdam's district of the same name.
Red Letter Media, not Red Light. Come on.
I'm interjecting humor into the podcast.
Uh-huh. Anyway, I mean, you know, the thing is, I'm using my YouTube apps on my consoles much more than I ever did before. So I have to wonder how this is going to integrate with that sort of thing. You know, with the Wii, with the Xbox One, the PS4.
But, I mean, it doesn't say that they're going to be removing their current business model. It just says they're going to be offering an
additional. Yeah, I know. I wonder how it's going to work with the with the consoles.
That's it might not be available on consoles.
That's what I'm pondering, you know, because the consoles heavily do Spotify and all that stuff. So, I mean, do you use any music services like that?
occasionally I'll use Pandora, but well, usually only when I'm working late.
The only one I ever used was Last.fm. And only because, you know, you did your thing and, you know, based on the artists that you did, they would do, you know, blocks of your artists. You know, that was fine, but it really didn't hook me. And since 30 Rock is no longer in the air, I never use Hulu either. Anyways, we're going to move on to reader feedback. Go ahead.
We have reader feedback?
Listener feedback, yeah.
We this sounds awfully familiar.
Yeah, it's last week's, so we have to do it again.
So, okay.
This time you read it, not me.
Okay, from Alpha Shard. Hey, guys, glad to have you have the show back. I was concerned about on what happened. I'm sorry to hear that Jordan is gone. Does this mean you need a replacement? Yes, it does. At Activision, speaking of them only having a few actual games, they are reviving the Sierra band, apparently. If you go to Sierra.com, you will see a trailer they have released for this. I'm not sure what to make of it, since more will be revealed at GameCon. When you mentioned them only having a few games that belong to them, this got me thinking that this may be in part of the reason why they are reviving the Sierra brand to make more games.
Well, we found out was that Sierra is going to be their indie game branch. So that's going to be serving as their, you know, sort of like their arm, you know, like how Touchstone is for the R-rated Disney movies. You know, Sierra is going to be their indie game, what's it called? Oh, darn. Banner.
It's a different brand.
Their banner. Their indie game banner.
I don't know if this means that they will hold the old Sierra game developers. No, they will not rehire all the Sierra game developers. That's just my two cents.
Is it because the old Sierra game developers are doing their own stuff on Kickstarter, like Jane Jensen?
Right, well, I mean, no. I mean, they just moved on to other things. Yeah. I mean, that would be like me waiting for them to make another Tinkerbell MMO and expecting someone to call me saying, hey, do you want to come be a part of it? Like,
wait a minute. It wasn't called Tinkerbell MMO. It was called... Oh, shoot. I forgot what it was.
Yes. Pixie Hollow. It was Tinkerbell MMO.
I know. But I was just saying it was called Pixie Land.
You're missing my point, though.
Yeah, I get that.
So it would be like expecting them to call me if they were going to make a different Tinkerbell MMO.
Right.
Like that, you know, people move on. Careers change. Skill sets change. So, yeah. That's just to answer you, Alpha Shard. At Disney Revenue Up, yeah, ouch indeed. Quote, we have money now that we've restructured a bunch of people out of jobs. At Sony Lawsuit Settlement, no matter what Sony does, they will still look bad for holding back that information. Why they thought that idea was good is beyond me. At Yogscast Kickstarter, every one of these is, I think, an investment, since gambling to me is more of a game of chance, like with dice, horses, or sports, etc. If you don't do your research, then yes, you are gambling the money. However, as Jonah pointed out, find out if they are an experienced game maker, and it's less risk. I trust Obsidian because of their impressive resume of past games they have made. I've been that careful with the other projects I've backed on or kept an eye on. Paul is right as well. You need more than just a neat or cool idea. You need to know how to make that idea happen. So with that in mind, I can think you can use Kickstarter to simply invest in a game's future and avoid games that will likely not make it. At Space Invaders, I think Paul is right here and that this is going to be another battleship movie. It doesn't seem like a good enough material to make a movie out of that won't seem generic. We have so many of these already, as Jonah tried to point out. This could easily be fun if they were going to make a tongue-in-cheek parody like Mars Attacks, but they will probably take the other serious tone and try for an Independence Day and fail. Maybe they will get a good writer and director, but this does seem like a desperate grasping at straws. At the PC and console decline, really? You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. At the question of the week, with more digital games, this certainly seems possible, making it easier to beta, perhaps, and find bugs to be fixed later.
So our new question of the week is, have you ever attended a convention devoted to a game? Oh, that's right. Okay, well, this one will put you in a funk. Shady Minecraft convention disappears, ticket money missing. And this comes just from Kotaku. Minorama, which was marketed as an unofficial gathering for Minecraft fans in New York City last month, never actually happened. On July 7th, days before the weekend that was supposed to be Minorama, which was July 11th through the 13th, the organizers suddenly said they were postponing the convention, infuriating hopeful attendees who had already booked hotels and airfare. Now, this little thing is a little bit hilarious to me. The Twitter account said, in all caps, "Please note we are not a scam." And then said, "It is with our deep regret that I inform you that hashtag Minorama has been postponed. Stay tuned for updates." You know, I love a tweet that starts off, "Please note we are not a scam." Doesn't that tell you, yes, we are a scam? You know, if you're saying that first off, then something's deeply wrong. On July 8th, organizer Lou Gasco added on Twitter that the convention had been delayed because, quote-unquote, financing fell through. There's another three words that usually indicates scam. And promised he'd send out an update with specific instructions for refunds. But now their web presence has disappeared. Their website is down, and earlier this month they deleted their Twitter account, which was quickly picked up by a squatter. The current description reads, "Best Minecraft con to never happen coming to New York City 20 never." Their Facebook account still exists, but hasn't been updated since July 8th, though other people are still posting on their wall asking about ticket refunds. Tickets for Minorama cost $150 each, and Gasco said in July that he'd sold 3,600 of them. That's potentially $540,000 now unaccounted for. People who hope to attend Minorama say they haven't received a word from the organizers about whether the show will actually ever happen or whether they'll get refunds. One ticket buyer told Kotaku in an email, "I never heard from Minorama, not surprised that they completely disappeared. I filed a claim with Chase, still waiting for determination, but the people who pay through PayPal have no chance to recover their money because the tickets were purchased so long ago. Another Minorama ticket buyer told me that he submitted a chargeback with his credit card provider and was able to get a refund, but he has also never heard back about the people behind the failed convention." This is my favorite part. Kotaku called Timothy Carroll, another of the organizers behind Minorama. "I introduced myself as a reporter with Kotaku and asked if he could answer some questions about the convention he helped organize. He said, no comment, and then hung up." So, yeah. What you mean, if he's able to contact one of the organizers so quickly, why aren't the law enforcement involved here then? It's not like they're hype.
I don't know. The whole thing seems really sketchy.
You know? I mean, okay, there is one way this is not a scam. Well, obviously not if they just vanish with all the money. But, you know, sometimes people organize a convention and they spend the money on something and it's the wrong thing and it falls through, you know, so they don't have even the money to refund people back.
Here's what I don't understand. What kind of, like, is this basically them saying they didn't sell enough tickets to cover their costs?
Apparently not.
I don't know. I find it very difficult to believe that. I really think that something fishier is going on here.
Now, there was something. Now, here's the thing, is that people bought tickets and hotels. Now, one thing, though, is that it is New York City, right? And, okay, you're not going to this Minecraft convention, but you are going to one of the biggest tourist places in the world.
Maybe, but they, I don't know, but these people definitely, if they weren't a scam, they definitely had an obligation to contact each of the people who had already pre-registered and telling them that it's been postponed so that they could try to get out of their hotel and flight reservations.
Well, here's the thing is that there was YouTubers, right, who did a makeshift convention and tried to get everybody who was involved with this thing, you know. And anybody who had Minorama tickets got in for free.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of like a makeshift convention, you know, so that, you know, people actually, you know, because the thing is that this is basically all this convention really was to get people together and you know, and share their passions, you know, and this hobby. And, you know, if you can still meet people who love Minecraft and make friends in person, you know, with people.
Well, all the warm, cuddly feels possible, but there were still people who dropped the ball here, and they need to be held accountable.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but at least, you know, I mean, the people who were, you know, the people who got totally screwed were the ones with PayPal, you know, and you're hoping, you know, like I said, you know, I hope they managed to have a fun time in New York while they were here, the scandal notwithstanding, you know. so that at least they could get something out of it. But yeah, I mean, you know, one thing is that here, again, caveat emptor, I mean, one of the things that people were wondering is how many of these people knew that this was an unofficial convention, you know? This is not...
BronyCon, yeah, but you know what? BronyCon's an unofficial convention, too. It's not sponsored by Hasbro.
Yeah, but it does have sponsors, doesn't it? It does have external people who are sponsoring it.
It has external people that are sponsoring it, but an individual can sponsor it if they want to cough over a $5,000 ticket fee.
I wonder if these people, the people who are doing Minorama, were trying to get sponsors and they couldn't. You know? But if you're going to do that, you should get sponsors before you start selling tickets, you know?
There you go.
So, you know, there's a line I like to say, either they're guilty or they're stupid. Either way, they have to pay, you know?
Because I agree.
You know, because...
No comment in hanging up, though? Mm, I don't know. They're
Well, it could be embarrassing. It's not to deal with.
I now brand them scammers. I call bullshit.
But, you know, if they're scammers, they're not very good scammers because someone was able to contact them. I mean, if you're a scammer, you should be able to vanish. Leave no trace. You know?
No. If you're a scammer, you just need to not be able to be dragged into court. There's a difference. If there's some legal nonsense on the bottom of their tickets to say that the event can be canceled at any time without refund, I mean, then they're fine.
That's true. But they did. But they started off saying, we're going to try and get you refunds. I mean.
Oh, we're going to try. Yeah. Oh, look at that. I tried and it didn't work.
I don't know.
Shucks.
This story is just, you know, maybe, you know, a little shocking. I mean, I shouldn't be shocked, but I'm still a little shocked.
I'm not at all shocked.
Well, no, the thing is that, you know, like something this obvious and big, you know, and, you know, it's a downer. I just hope the people who decided to make good on the plane tickets and the hotels had a good time while here.
That's why you don't go to a convention until it's at least the third year.
So we do have a new question of the week, and it is, have you ever attended a convention devoted to a game? Sort of like, you know, a Kingdom Hearts game, a Kingdom Hearts convention. Or I know you just recently attended a convention devoted to a single animated series.
I did, actually. I went to BronyCon. It was August 1st through 3rd in Baltimore, and it was awesome.
Yeah. So, Paul, have you ever attended a convention that was devoted to a single game? Or at least, you know, actually, let's say a single developer.
No.
Really? Because I know there's QuakeCon. I've never attended that. There's, of course, Blizzard BlizzCon, which is devoted to World of Warcraft and Diablo. There's also, like I said, I already mentioned, they had the Call of Duty con once, but I have not, although I wouldn't say that I wouldn't. It depends on the ticket price and also where it is, you know.
I only ended up going to BronyCon because I happened to be like just a state or so away.
Yeah. When did you learn of it?
But you know what? Back in the day, before GameStop was a thing and, like the closest thing you had was a Funko Land, so I'm dating myself here. But there used to be these privately run, like, game swaps. Like a company would go with a bunch of like NES cartridges and rent out a conference room in a hotel, and they would charge people to, you know, they would charge a commission basically to trade one of your games for one of their games. Or you could go out and trade them into the hallway. So I did attend one of those things one time. I think it was like 8 or 9. It was really weird. It was like setting up a GameStop for a day. And whatever they had is whatever you could try to swap from.
I nearly went to BlizzCon, but I couldn't make it. So, I mean, BlizzCon, you know, they give you stuff, you know. That's one of the things about going to BlizzCon or QuakeCon is that when you go there, you're going to come back with a lot of swag. Mainly it's marketing, you know, stuff that they're going to be releasing like a month later. But, you know, it's still neat to have all that stuff there. Anyways, look for our show notes at Gaming Podcast on it, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at Gaming Podcast on it. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at gamestudios.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. You know, when people thought that the podcast was in trouble, all sorts of people we never heard of started writing in with concern. And now that they know we're okay, it's just Alpha Shard. You know, we'd like to know there are other people besides Alpha Shard and Hans Krebs and you know, and everybody else of the regulars. We want to hear some.
If I don't start seeing the love, I'm going to walk. Just saying.
Yeah, there you go. So Paul's threatening to leave. So please write in. People who have been listening in for a while, but, you know, the first time, long-time listeners, first-time callers, we want to have your first-time calls. We want to have some variety. It's the spice of life.
I can do other things with this hour every week.
And we will see you next week.
Bye, Bonds.